After running away from Esav and learning at Yeshiva Shem Ve'ever for 14 years, Yaakov Avinu is exhausted. Not sleeping in 14 years will do that to you. And he finally takes a moment to rest, and he puts his head down. And the Pasuk tells us, Vayifka b'makom, vayolen sham. He encounters the place, he comes upon the place, and he rests there. Chazal teach us in Maseches Brachos and Daf Chavavim Beis that before going to sleep, Yaakov davened. And that was when Yaakov instituted Tfilas Arvis. And we know the Gemara tells us Avram Avinu instituted Shachris, Yitzchak, Vayetze Yitzchak Lesoach Basada was Tfilas Mincha, and Yaakov instituted Tfilas Mariv. The problem is, if we're going to imagine that the three Avos, each of the three Avos instituted a Tfilah, one would imagine that the Tfilos should be in order, that we should start with where the Jewish calendar starts a day, Mariv, move on to Shachris, and then to Mincha. But it seems that it's not that way. Avram Avinu started with Shachris when we wake up in the morning, Yitzchak Mincha, and Yaakov Mariv. Why is it? What's the specific connection between each of these Avos and these particular Tfilos? Why did Yitzchak find it most comfortable to daven Mincha time? Why did Avram find it most comfortable to daven Shachris time? And what was it about Yaakov Avinu and Mariv when it was nighttime? Why was Yaakov's tefillah so effective at that particular time? Furthermore, there's a well-known medrash quoted by Rashi, well-known Maimar Chazal quoted by Rashi, that is somewhat entertaining, and certainly as young children we take it at face value, but needs to be analyzed a little bit more deeply. The Chazal tell us that when Yaakov Avinu, it says, Vayikach me'avnei ha'makom, he took from the stones of the area to rest his head on, and then when he wakes up, it says that there was an even, that there was only one stone when he woke up. So Rashi, of course, gives a famous explanation, Hischilu merivo zu azu, Zosomeris alayaniach tzaddik es rosho. The stones were fighting with each other. This one said, I want the tzaddik to rest his head on me. Vizosomeris alayaniach. And this one said, no, I want the tzaddik to rest his head on me. Miyad ason HaKadosh Baruch Hu evenachas. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, ah, we'll make it one big stone, one big even. And whenever you see a Maimer Chazal like that, where Chazal seem to, you know, in a world where we grow up with Disney and Pixar and these things sound reasonable, that stones can talk and that they can argue, so perhaps children aren't taken aback by that. But we know that the reality is that we should be taken aback by that. What exactly does that mean, that stones are fighting with each other? What are Chazal trying to tell us? What message are Chazal trying to convey to us with this imagery of the stones? There's the Rambam in his Hakdama to Perichelek, just parenthetically, mentions how one is supposed to deal with various Ma'amari Chazal that sound absurd. And the Rambam says that there are basically three groups of people. Some people are very, very frum about it. And they say, well, if Chazal say it, even though it sounds absurd, then it must be true and it must be taken at face value. And the Rambam says such people are very simple-minded. They think that if they only understand it on a certain level, Chazal couldn't have meant anything but that level. But they're basically saying, they're trying to honor Chazal, but what essentially they're doing is insulting Chazal. They're basically saying that Chazal could not have meant anything deeper than what my mind is able to grasp. And that's a terrible insult to Chazal. The second group of people, the Rambam says, see something that sounds ridiculous and say, it is ridiculous. Chazal were fools. Chazal were too simple-minded, and they didn't know what they were talking about, and they had all these crazy beliefs. And the Rambam says that group, of course, is also extremely off-base, and that group is also disrespecting Chazal a great deal. Chazal were gedolei olam, they were geniuses, and they were spiritual giants. And they knew what they were talking about. So to assume that if you can't understand something beyond a certain level, that Chazal couldn't have meant something beyond a certain level, is obviously flawed. And then the Rambam says there's a third group, but he writes, it's hard to even call it a group, more like a chevra. There's a small, small group of people that understand that when Chazal says something, and it sounds outlandish, it sounds strange, they probably meant something very deep. And it usually takes years of study to pick up on the language and to be able to understand how Chazal convey certain types of information, certain hashkafic ideas, certain realities, through what sounds like outlandish stories. And the Rambam writes, that's obviously, the third group is obviously correct. in the way to understand Ma'amari Chazal. And he actually says in his Hakdamah to Parachelek that if you belong to group 1 and 2, he doesn't want you to even read his books. Don't bother trying to read the Rambam's Pirush HaMishnayos specifically to Parachelek. But if you belong to group 3, then he has some hadracha. So obviously we see a Maimer Chazal like this, of rocks fighting with each other. There's a message here. Chazal meant to convey something powerful and something important, but we need to find out what exactly it is that Chazal meant to convey. So Zalman, I think we can explain this perhaps based on an idea that was developed by Rav Zalman Suratskin, Zichrono Livracha. Rav Zalman Suratskin in the Aznaim L'Torah explains that the Avos were not masaking the Tfilos in any particular order, per se. Rather, each of the Avos was masaking a Tfila that most fits their own personal life experience. And in doing so, they taught us the value of reaching out to the Ribbono Shel Olam in any circumstance that we may find ourselves. First, of all the Avos, Avram Avinu lived the most like royalty. He was wealthy beyond belief. He was the richest man in the world. He was respected immensely by his contemporaries. He certainly faced challenges, 10 big ones, big nisyonos. But he emerges unscathed, and sometimes miraculously so. He comes out of a furnace, and he's unscathed. He doesn't have a burn on his body. From each one, he comes out stronger. And he never had to go through a serious downfall. He became known as a Nasi Elokim. After the war with the four kings, Kol Malchei Mizrach Umarav, all the kings got together and asked him to serve as king over the entire world. The only dark cloud hanging over most of his life. And after all, this is a man who was, if you could imagine, viewed by society, by the world, as the richest man in the world, the greatest tzaddik in the world, the most giving man in the world. Can you imagine how much respect someone who would get in secular society if people viewed him as Bill Gates and the Dalai Lama combined into one person? This was the way the world viewed Avram Avinu. He was in a Nasi Elokim and they all knew it. The only dark cloud hanging over his life was the inability to have a son from his wife Sarah. And then finally, as an old man, he receives word that the child that he yearned for so long is going to be born. And that's when he davens. Vayashkem Avram Baboker El Amakom Asher Amad Sham. Ein Amida El Tfila, Chazal say. That's when Avram Avinu was Misakein Tfila Shachris. When? At the height of his joy and gratification. And this is in a life that's full of joy and gratification. Avram Avinu offers a Tfila. This is a man, as we said, wealthy beyond belief, respected by everybody, came from humble beginnings, but has, in the words of the Rambam, the beginning of Hilchos Avodah Zarah, tens of thousands of followers following him around and buying into his whole system of belief. And at the time where he feels most accomplished and most happy, he davens. Shachris is the tefillah recited when the sun has just risen and the day is just beginning. And there's hope, and there's optimism. Have a great day. Well, I just might. I might actually have a great day. It's still early. You never know. All seems good in the world of Shachris. Avram is the one who teaches us to daven in the good times, when we have everything we need, when everything is sunny and beautiful, and to say thank you to the Ribbono Shel Olam every now and then for what we have. Yitzchak lives a less eventful, but far more complex life. He never saw Golus. His entire life was spent in Eretz Yisrael. Yet, Yitzchak is the first Jew to ever have been told, Lech me'imanu, get out of here, we don't want you here. Avimelech threw him out. Avimelech said, we're not interested in having you around. Of course, later on, Avimelech chases him down, and Yitzchak says, wait a second, I thought you threw me out. And Avimelech says, yeah, but I realize that it's worthwhile to have a relationship with you. But that's a different story. Yitzchak was the first person ever to be sent away, ever to be told, you're a Jew, we don't need you around these parts. When we refer to the 400 years that the Jewish people spent in Golus Mitzrayim, where do we begin to count from? From the birth of Yitzchak. But Yitzchak was never there. Yitzchak never even left Eretz Yisrael. Because the Golus, the winds of change, started to blow in the days of Yitzchak. Yitzchak lived in the calm before the storm. When you knew it was coming, but it wasn't there yet. He lived in a time when the bright midday sun was still shining, but it was obvious that all of that was about to change. that the sun was going to set. He sensed a turning point coming very soon. His life was a turning point in the history of our nation. And he davens Tfilas Mincha, when the sun is still shining, but it will set momentarily. Yitzchak instituted that tefillah when? As he awaited the arrival of his future bride, Rivka, the most major turning point in any person's life, when they get married. The prayer was instituted right before the greatest turning point, his marriage. Yitzchak teaches us that when we're comfortable, but the future seems uncertain, and we're not really sure where we're going to go from here, and we're hopeful and anxious and not really certain about what's going to happen next, we reach out to the Ribbono Shel Olam for help and for strength. And Mincha is actually rather unique, because Mincha actually provides us with the opportunity for the best type of tefillah. Because normally, in order to be able to be focused on tefillah, we have to feel a need. We have to feel a need to cry out to the Ribbono Shel Olam. But at the same time, if we're too needy, we may not have the wherewithal to focus our tefillah. Mincha is unique, Yitzchak's tefillah is unique, in that he lived in a calm environment, he lived in a good, positive environment, he wasn't suffering yet, so he had that focus and the wherewithal to daven, but there was also that anxiety about the future, so he had the motivation to daven as well. We're not yet in the throes of night, where concentration is too difficult, nor are we in the bright sunshine of the morning, when we don't sense any real urgency. That's what Mincha is. And that's why the most meaningful tefillos, and the tefillos most likely to be accepted, come at Mincha time. That's the Gemara Maseches Brachos Davav. Eliyahu lo nena, ela b'tefillos Mincha. Eliyahu was answered, he davened all day, but his tefillos were only answered around Mincha time. Because that's when a tefillah is most impactful. Yaakov, moving on to the third of the Avos, when asked to assess his own life, in his own words, Me'at v'ra'im hayu yimei shnei chayai. My life was very short and bad. His life was miserable. First running from a brother who wanted him dead, then going to an uncle who wanted to take him for everything he had, then having to deal with his daughter being abducted and his overzealous sons causing trouble in defending their sister. Finally, the heartbreaking loss of his favorite son for so many years, and that's after losing his wife, his beloved wife, at such a young age. Yaakov's life was a bitter and cold Laila. Yet in the midst of the darkness, Yaakov finds the strength and the courage to daven tefillas arvis. He institutes this tefillah at what may have been the most difficult time in his life. He was running from Esav, and normally when you're running away from something bad, at least you have some sort of hope, you're running towards some sort of light, but where was he going? He was going to a Lavan. And not only that, sometimes when things are difficult in life, we have some support system, we have our family to lean on, we have someone to lean on. Yaakov was all alone. He had nothing, he had nobody, no wife, no children. And that's when Yaakov davened. That's when Yaakov davened. That's the Tfilas Mariv. There's no wife, no children, no parents, no one with him. All alone in the world, and he knows he's a target, being targeted by his brother. And when the present and the future look bleak, and we're not yet able to recognize the light at the end of the tunnel, Yaakov teaches us, Vayifka b'mako. We reach out to the Ribbono Shel Olam, Kiva HaShemesh, because things are going to turn around for us. Teaches us to keep hope in a time like that, in times when things are very difficult. And that's the tefillah of a Yaakov Avinu. And perhaps with this background, we can understand the meaning of the fighting rocks that we started with. The Medrash tells us that Yud Beis Avanim, that Yaakov saw, he realized that it was a gezeirah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he's going to be the one that is going to be mamed the Yud Beis Shvatim. That Avram wasn't mamed, Yitzchak wasn't mamed them. Ani imis achus hein Yud Beis Avanim zu lezu, yodei ani shani mamed Yud Beis Shvatim. Yaakov said, before going to sleep, if these 12 rocks actually combine into one, then I know for sure that I'm going to be mamed Yud Beis Shvatim. And he saw that it happened, and he knew that he was destined to have the Shvatim. Yaakov realized that Avram Avinu was not able to establish the Shiftei Ka, not because Avram Avinu didn't have enough children, I mean, he didn't, but that wasn't the main reason, but because they weren't able to get along with each other. The first two were fighting with each other. The same for Yitzchak. Only once Yaakov comes along can the Shiftei Ka be established. His children obviously have some struggles, But at the end of the day, eventually, they have a lot of struggles, but at the end of the day, eventually, they manage to stick together and say as one voice, as Yaakov is lying on his deathbed, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. The 12 stones have their fights, and they argue it out, but each one is L'shem Shemayim. Alaya Niach Tzadik Hasrosho. Each one wants what's best, wants to be able to come closer to the Ribbono Shel'Olam. So at the end of the day, when each one is fighting for the right things, at the end of the day, they're going to form one strong unit. And that's the Shiftei Ka. And very often, for Jews to come together and to really work toward a common goal, unfortunately, what it takes a lot of times is experiencing a Laila like Yaakov Avinu experienced. Is going through difficult times, hard times, going through the Laila of life, the dreariness, the hopelessness of certain situations in life, where Jews begin to come together. Unfortunately, we just saw last week where people who perhaps never had a good word to say about Chabad in their lives, all of a sudden were praying for these wonderful people who were giving their lives to spread Torah and who were threatened and Rachmana Litzlan, what happened to them. And Klal Yisrael has a certain sense of achdus, and we better have a certain sense of achdus, because when all else fails in creating a sense of achdus, sometimes the only thing that works sometimes is when we're under attack, is when we feel that there's a Laila in our lives, when we feel that there's a common enemy, that someone's after us. And that's why Yaakov perhaps is able to establish the Shiftei Ka. What brings the 12 rocks together? It's bedafka the Laila of Yaakov Avinu's life. It's bedafka that experience that Yaakov Avinu had to go through. So I think the message is, obviously, we should reach out to the Ribbono Shel Olam in all the times in our lives. When it's the Boker of our life, when it's the Erev of our life, when it's the Laila of our lives, as both personally and communally. But I think the most important message is that when we do experience periods of Laila, that we have to make sure to take advantage at least and feel a sense of Achdus, feel a sense of the Avanim who maybe sometimes fight a little bit too much, but come together and feel a sense of a unity of a Klal Yisrael, and feel like we are actually one unit, we are one big rock, we do all stand for each other. I think that's the message of Yaakov Avinu.